Hello, and welcome to this week's edition of The Boundless Show. Back after the new year, I made it out of Minnesota. Hello, everyone. I have Mott, Steve, and Suzanne.
Hi, Lisa. Great to have you back.
Oh, thanks.
We missed you.
It was real. It was good. Good times. So once we get the remote studio in the small town up there in Minnesota, you know, we can just do the show. So, but no. Well, they do have TV there. They have electronics.
Yeah.
But I was snowed in, 17 inches of snow one day.
Oh, wow.
So it was some crazy times. Yeah. I actually walked up to the post office on that day because I just had to get out of the house. My mom's house is about 11 square feet, I think. And she and I were sitting there together. And so, but I walked up to the post office and it was like Mr. Edwards in The Long Winter in Little House on the Prairie when he like storms across the prairie for the kids with their shiny penny and piece of like, you know, candy or whatever that they
had. Orange, so, right?
Mm-hmm, I was just blowing across. Everything was all drifted. So it was a good time. But anyway, on today's show, we're going to be talking, first of all, rounding up our the last segment of our Guy's Guide to Marrying Well, this time talking about spiritual compatibility, which we have all agreed is important, so we're going to tell you about that. We also have John Thomas actually in studio this week. He's here in Colorado Springs, which is extremely exciting, so we're going to be talking to him about what it's like to leave the nest, go to the big city, and then for many reasons return home and set up shop there and live your life, and the pros and cons of all of that, and the joys and perhaps some sorrows, we'll see. And then finally, our inbox today, we're going to be telling a male listener what it's like. I guess he has some questions on just pursuing someone after she's come out of a relationship, and what do you reveal and at what point? Do you put everything on the table at first? Questions, concerns, interests, all of that. And Steve is going to weigh in on that for us. So, but here we are to talk about spiritual compatibility. And we know, I think we would agree that a lot of dating conversations revolve around, are you compatible? Like, you know, do you have interests? Do you have commonalities? Stuff like that. And people will ask you that. What do you have in common? And many of the dating services revolve around that. But you guys would argue that spiritual compatibility, while the other things are important too, I mean, obviously, you know, there are interests and stuff that are important, but spiritual compatibility is paramount. And so let's just start out by talking about that first. Let's just hammer out, what are we talking about as far as non-negotiables that really you don't need to pray about and you don't need to ask about?
Well, the ones that are written out in the Bible say that we should be equally yoked. And so that idea is that you do trust Jesus as your Savior and that you're sharing a destination for eternity. I mean, that's kind of big picture. But beyond that, I think it's the simple...
Can I just interrupt there and say that from my experience on dating sites, that does not mean you grew up in America. Okay? I mean, people's definition of what is a Christian, if you don't know your own faith and know what you believe and know what is important... go back to the scriptures and figure it out, because I'm so tired of this like hazy shade of gray of just, well, they're an American or they grew up in Texas, so obviously they're a believer.
Well,
no.
You know, actually, Lisa, I think that's the reason why the context of spiritual compatibility gets glossed over, because there is a sense of, yeah, we grew up in America and we go to church, we're Christians. Now let's look at the other more important issues of compatibility. And that's when you have people looking at, okay, I was a firstborn and I was the youngest, or I was a middle child, or I'm a INTJ or you're from the South and you're from the North. And those kind of compatibility issues tend to kind of get more attention and more oxygen in the relationship. And maybe those have been over-prioritized while people have been brushing under the rug some very important issues of spiritual compatibility. And those are the ones that often, unfortunately, blow up later in the marriage and people realize they should have camped out on those a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
But I, you know, just to back up real quick, I really empathize with guys who ask the question, is this the right person? Especially anybody who thinks about it and thinks, I'm going to be with this person for the rest of my life. We sure better have something to talk about. We sure better be a good fit. And then it's so easy to get anxious and think, I've got to do everything I possibly can to make sure this is exactly the right person. We better do every test and all the 40 measures of compatibility and all those things we can do. And I think part of the problem with that is that it creates the sense that if you do all the work on the front end, then you coast. You've landed the perfect match. And the reality is you've got one school of thought of people who say you get you find the perfect compatible person and you can have a good relationship together. You got other people who are saying you need opposites. Opposites attract, and if you're too close to each other, then one of you is redundant. So who's right? You know, so that's why I think that school of thought can ultimately be frustrating. And the more important focus is spiritual compatibility.
Yeah, another reason that Christian compatibility can be pushed under the rug or pushed aside is because a guy can place too much emphasis on physical attractiveness or chemistry. And that's another danger that's talked about or written about in the Guy's Guide.
Yeah, I think that's important. I mean, we want to clarify, we're not against people being physically attracted and having chemistry. I think God designed us in such a way that we are attracted to people that he's made beautiful. And I think it's a very important part of a relationship. But as is also mentioned in the booklet, beauty fades in 100% mm-hmm. of relationships. And so you can't mm-hmm. make that paramount.
And chemistry ebbs and flows. And so the point of a couple of the articles is that do not be a slave to these things.
Especially when you realize you have to compromise somewhere. You have to realize you're not going to get the perfect person. And so when it comes time to settle to some degree, settling is something we've talked about before, where do you settle? And unfortunately, some people prioritize appearance, attractiveness, compatibility, and their ability to have fun recreationally and go hiking and all these things, and then compromise in the area of, well, she doesn't share my faith in Christ, or she doesn't mm-hmm. share my commitment to spiritual growth or something like that. Those are the things that prove to matter a lot more.
Well, or it may seem that they do because you're in that kind of halcyon period where it's just everyone looks nice and friendly and looks like they love Jesus, you know, but until yeah. you get conflict and you get maybe some trials in your life or whatever, that's when you know whether or not their faith is real and what that looks like. So, okay, so if we're looking for someone who is a for real believer, that's important. But what about issues that might be a little bit grayer? I mean, when you're looking at worship styles, when you're looking at specific like theological beliefs, you know, churches, when you're deciding what church are you going to attend, whatever. I mean, are there any experiences where, you know, where that comes into play?
Something that I've noticed is I think that we have a very low standard for the equally yoked statement. It's like, well, if you can say that you believe Jesus died on the cross for your sins and rose again, then you're in. That's good enough. And if I'm attracted to you, then we're going to be great. But you have to think about even spiritual passion. If one person in the yoke is pulling with a lot more spiritual fervor yeah. than the other, it's going to be frustrating. Or if they're if they have different passions, I mean, somebody feels really called to inner city missions and the other feels really called to Africa. That's going to prove to be a problem. So I think there's more ways to be unequally yoked than just whether you've made a profession of faith.
Yeah, marriage is a calling to oneness, and that oneness is going to be disrupted when you have differences of opinion on worship styles or doctrinal issues or different callings even.
Yeah, that's why some people have used the expression spiritual weight class to say it's one thing to be equally yoked, but within that equal yoke, what's your spiritual weight class? And are you looking at someone who's in a totally different league? You're a welterweight and they're a bantamweight or something like that. But now I want to caution here too, because I think there are two concerns that come up whenever you start talking about spiritual incompatibility. We've got people listening right now who have different taste in worship, different have been attending different churches and are beginning to think maybe we are not compatible because of that. There are things that can be resolved. Mm-hmm. The question is your commitment and your approach to oneness and your realization that in becoming one, there are adjustments and compromises you make. But the question is, are you better for the kingdom together than apart? Because there are some people who God is working on them differently and is calling them to different places. And it is impossible for them to simultaneously do the inner city mission and do the suburban mm-hmm. mission or whatever. But the other issue to keep in mind is just the reality that there are a lot of spiritually mature women out there who are dating guys who are lagging in spiritual maturity from them, who still have potential. And so I just want to bring up again the issue we've talked about before of aptitude. Just
trajectory.
Because, yeah, trajectory. Just because a guy doesn't necessarily show all the passion and fervor doesn't mean it's impossible. But the key issue is aptitude. Does he show a maturity and a willingness to grow? And ultimately, does he show that he has what it takes when it's going to be his responsibility to step up and be a spiritual leader in the home?
I think another thing that you can talk about is teachability. Is the person teachable? And Steve, you talked about the differences in spiritual weight class, and that was an issue in my relationship with Beth early on, because I was a fairly new Christian. I was a Christian less than a year, and she had been a Christian a long time. But I think in her observation and in her talks with other people who knew me, I think that they saw that I was teachable. I had a hunger to grow and a hunger for things of the Lord. And so even though we were in a different spiritual weight class at that time, I think she saw some trajectory there.
Yeah. Which is very different from someone who says during the dating relationship, hey, look, you just have to understand, I don't like to go to church. You know, I mean, that's the opposite of a teachable spirit.
Well, or even less of a extreme than that. I dated a guy who I just realized that there was an incompatibility, because even though I believe he loved the Lord, he sat me down one day and was just like, look, Lisa, I'm never going to be the one that's all jazzed about Bible studies. I'm not going to be an Awana leader. I just want to sit at home and listen to Christian radio and do whatever, attend church on Sundays. And I just realized that's not me. And that's not a good match for me. You know, I'm not going to judge him on his relationship with the Lord, but still, I just knew that's not me.
So. On the other hand, related to that, I think it's good not to judge the heart by certain exteriors.
Yeah.
Because sometimes, you know, maybe the person does have a deeper spiritual core than you can see when you initially meet them. And maybe their spiritual gift is helping people fix their car and witnessing through that rather than getting up and being a worship leader. And I think this is particularly, I don't know if you've seen it, Lisa, but I think it's an issue with women who are kind of looking for the up on stage, professing his faith kind of guy as, well, that's the spiritual guy. And there might be some really fine Christian men that you just aren't seeing that as externally.
Yeah. And it could be just that either the guy or the girl has just been sitting under poor teaching for years, and they really haven't had a chance to grow with some biblical teaching that's expositional, or so. You never know how they will end up in a church that does that and is doctrinally sound. It could just be that they're a believer who's been fed, you know, milk all their lives.
Or maybe they need the yoke. I have a friend who used to tell me, I'm better when I'm in a godly relationship, and he's now married. And I think he was kind of foundering a little bit before he met his now wife, but now he's a youth pastor, and he just kind of needed her there to give him that accountability and that focus.
And that goes back to what Kurt Bruner talked about when he came on the podcast and said, we don't have that many things in our lives that really get to push us and stretch us, like marriage and then starting a family later, where we really have to live out our faith, where we're really tested in just how much we are willing to lay down our life. Mm-hmm. And so that's why, at the end of the day, one of the simplest ways to look at spiritual compatibility is, are you both prepared to conform to the image of God, which is what we're all called to do? And to do that by laying your life down. And so when you look at Ephesians 5, which is basically the job description for marriage, and then going into Ephesians 6 for parenting, it is this idea that says, as dearly loved children, imitate me by laying down your life for each other. And so then that's what sets up later in Ephesians 5, where it's saying, men, love your wife the way Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her. And women, submit to this man. Lay down something that all your feminist friends are telling you not to do. That issue of laying down your life, that's what gets lived out through the course of the marriage. And so the question is, even if you're not spiritually mature yet, are you willing to sign up for that job description and let that be the thing that grows your spiritual maturity, the dailiness of living it out?
Okay, so I just want to beat this dead horse one more time, because I don't know if it's entirely dead. So what do we say about two believers who are both extremely grounded in their faith and very passionate about the Lord, but one has memorized the Westminster Confession and is sprinkling babies, and the other is jumping in the aisles and speaking in tongues? Would you counsel those people to pursue a relationship if they, you know, because maybe they did come into it and there is that attraction and chemistry and they both love the Lord and love service and love whatever, but are real issues going to come as a result of that?
Yeah, I think it's possible that real issues will come with that if they don't deal with that on the front end. It's not something that you just overlook and get married and say, we'll work that out after we're married. I think it's because for each of them, these things are important. And it could prove to be a bigger issue than they even thought of going into it. So yeah, it could be, mm-hmm. but it's, I wouldn't say that they couldn't work it out.
Mm-hmm. Well, as a personal example, my parents were brand new Christians when they got married. They got saved in college. And so they were looking for a new church together as new believers. And they started out at a Pentecostal church. And my dad liked it fine. And he's pretty laid back and, you know, a little more on the emotional side. And my mom was really frustrated because she just felt a lot of pressure to speak in tongues. And she didn't have the gift and it wasn't coming. And finally, you know, my dad said, we don't have to go here. You know, we can go somewhere where we're both comfortable because I'm more committed to the unity of our marriage than where we go to church. So that's something to consider, is that if God's called you to that person, there are ways to compromise and work that out.
Yeah. Well, and that's why getting back to Mont's point about oneness, I think as an individualistic culture, we think about our own spiritual brand, our spiritual packaging. And the reality of marriage is that you do become one and you do give and take a little bit. And so there is this context of, are we as a family able to build together our spiritual heritage and our strength together? And there are couples that you can look at and you can say, wow, you just wonder what more God could have done if they had made that a bigger consideration in the dating time versus other couples you look at and you go, wow, it's amazing what God's doing through them because they valued being spiritually compatible and having a shared mission and passion in life. And so just to say God can work through a lot of relationships where we don't see how he's going to work, but that there are some beautiful things that happen in relationships where they really did take the time to discern spiritual compatibility.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that's great. And I do want to summarize, since I already beat one dead horse, I want to beat the other one, and that's the one that we opened up with, that just if you are dating someone who you truly, I mean, they have to have a vibrant and growing walk with the Lord. I mean, I am so tired of talking to friends and family members who have compromised on that because they have found someone, whether it's online or somewhere, and they just feel like they don't have any other opportunities and just somehow they're going to bring this person to church and they're going to have some revival experience. I don't even know. But I was in a conversation with someone on the phone the other day where we were talking and it was about a girl who's going to marry this guy and he is not a believer, but she thought that she had told him she wasn't going to marry him until he was a believer. So then she asked him these questions and apparently felt he gave the right answers. And, you know, it was kind of like, do you believe in Jesus? And I'm on the phone with this person. I'm in Walmart in the cosmetic aisle and I shout into my cell phone, even the devil believes in Jesus. And people around me are like looking at me. I was just so frustrated of just the complete milquetoast approach people take to faith and what, you know, can and can't happen. I mean, if you have to have a background in investigative journalism to ferret out someone's faith out of them, that is ridiculous. And I'm just so...
Well, and Lisa, I mean, this season we're going through right now with economic crisis and things like that is really the proving ground for a lot of marriages to see what kind of spiritual depth they have. Because it's one thing to have different preferences and worship styles and all that, but what your spiritual backup style is when your back's against the wall and you're under pressure, how much you look to God versus your own strength, where you look for your security, how you resolve conflict as a family based on your desire to please God more than anybody. This is where the seriousness of this issue comes out. And that's why at the end of the day, we're saying in a guy's guide to marrying well, value spiritual compatibility higher than all these pop compatibilities that are out there, because it's really what will make the difference between marrying well and not marrying well.
Yeah, I agree, Lisa. I think to your point, there should be some obviousness to spiritual compatibility. If you are trying to find his faith or her faith, and then that's a red flag. If it's just not apparent, then there's a certain common sense element to Christian compatibility.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Look for that stuff first, people. You can always take her to the Clinique counter. Okay. Well, that is it for this week's roundtable. Thanks, you guys, for weighing in on this. That was great. Of course, we want to hear your feedback. You can give that to us at our blog post related to the show or email us. editor@boundless.org. We want to hear from you. for this week's culture segment. I am here in the studio in the flesh with John Thomas. Many of you know John from his presence not only on the webzine and occasionally we've talked about him and dealt with stuff on the blog, but then now on our podcast for this year. We just finished a year of our podcast, so welcome, John. Good to have you here.
It is so great to be here. This is like coming to Oz. I've made it.
Well, it is. Although it's funny because, you know, I'm hearing your voice,
yes,
you know, and now seeing you, and you're like one of those
superstars. I'm sorry to disappoint you.
No, you're like one of those superstars, you know, like Rush Limbaugh, where you just know them by the voice, and then you're like, oh, I saw him in person.
Yeah, so that's right, exactly.
It's fantastic. And it's good to have you here because, you know, we usually let, obviously for those of you who are regular listeners, we usually let John just run his own show. He has done The Hungry Years for us, and he just puts stuff on paper and reads it and shares his experiences, and we just have to take it as is. But today I get to interview him and just keep it real.
This is the scary part.
I know. If he says anything inappropriate, I'm just going to say no, and we're not going to take that from you. So, but it's great to have you here. He's here for a number of other things. You were involved with the Arkansas Family Policy Council for a while, and you were at Focus in the past as well. A
couple of years at Focus, it's been 9 years, but we spent 2 years here. We were in Denver totally for about 6 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so you have some Colorado experience. Mm-hmm. That's good, but you did not lose the accent.
I did not. Well, and for a little bit I did, and then went back home, and now it's now it's all the way back.
Now it just returns. Yep. So, well, I personally have enjoyed so many of your Hungry Years segments myself and just crack up at them as well as just learning valuable insights from what you've shared there, John. So that's been great. And I do read, you know, the Boundless Answers, the men's questions too, because I feel, you know, it's just good to know.
It's your obligation to do that, I'm sure. But
It's not. No. No, I do it just for my own edification, trust me.
Yeah, so, what kind of advice is John giving guys out there? You do need to know that.
Exactly.
You know.
Well, and quite frankly, you know, is it correct?
Yeah.
Because then
I need
to determine if it's correct, and if it's not, then I would just
maybe 50%
call you up on the phone.
Of the time.
No, it's been good. So, well, today we're actually going to talk with you on a subject that probably I don't think you have addressed specifically in anything related to Boundless, because we tap you for other things, but we want to talk about the concept of launching out as an adult from your home, wherever that may be. And, you know, we tend to have all these grand plans when we're in high school and college of what we're going to do with our lives and who we're going to become and where we're going to be. And many of us have to adjust those as we move through life, but some of us do go out and we do things and we experience things. But then, you know, maybe some of those plans are revised, or they, you know, we come to a different place, or we have a family, or we, and sometimes that involves returning home to our roots, and whether we want to or not. And so we want to just talk to you a little bit today, John, about your experience with this, because you've, in some senses, seen it all or seen a lot and had a lot of different experiences. And I want to just start out by asking you, what really, like I just said, when you were in high school and you were in college, what were your, you know, God loves you and has a wonderful plan for your life. What was your plan for your life as you saw it playing out?
I was going to be a news anchor on the local television station. That was my big end all right there. That's where I was headed.
And local meaning?
Local in Little Rock or Hot Springs, Arkansas, where I was. Well,
big
Hot
times.
Springs doesn't have
big
a
times.
Doesn't yeah. have a news television mm-hmm. station, so that would have been Little Rock. But, you know, I I've done a little bit of all of this. I went to college, which was away from my hometown, but still in state, and then was asked to come back to my hometown and help start a radio station. And I really thought, I don't know, going back home, I don't know if I want to do that. And you know, I want to do something big, you know, go back to a town of 40,000 people and all that. But I did. I really felt like that's what the Lord wanted for me, and did that and enjoyed that, but still felt like, you know, there were more experiences that I wanted to add to my life than what were available there. And after I got married, my wife and I moved out here to Denver. And it was really a good thing for us. It was a good thing for our marriage to kind of distance ourselves a little bit from family, from her parents and my parents, and kind of leave and cleave. And, you know, when you're 1,000 miles away, you can certainly do that. So there were a lot of advantages to that. And then when we started about thinking about having children, we had some decisions to make there. We thought, well, now, do we want to raise our kids 1,000 miles away from the stream from which they came? Mm-hmm. We just really went through a season there of really thinking and praying about that, and finally came to the conclusion that they weren't going to move out to see us. And did we want them to get to know their family twice a year when we flew home, or once a year when we could afford it? And we just decided to pack up and go home. Now, we had that option to do. You know, we could, both of us kind of have careers that we could pick up and plug in and do that kind of thing. But there's advantages and disadvantages, both of the distance from home and being close to home.
Mm-hmm. Now, in this interim time, though, you did, like, you went to seminary, you got involved in public policy. Was that a departure from where you were growing up, or what kind of prompted you to get into that?
I did the broadcasting thing for a while right out of college with Christian radio, and then really started to get interested in public policy and more or less as a hobby and as a side interest, but then more and more as maybe a career. And decided seminary might be the direction to go to kind of be the entry point to that. And that's really what got us out to Denver. I went to seminary out here. And so the whole television news anchor thing just kind of went away. Mm-hmm. I don't know when it went away, but at some point it went away. And maybe it was the receding hairline that finally made me realize that wasn't going to work. But coming to Denver was incredible for me. I mean, going from a town of 40,000 to a city of, a metro area of 3 million maybe, was just, I mean, I was wide-eyed when we moved up here. I was really the country boy going to the city. And my wife adjusted a little bit better. She had been to school in Dallas and spent a lot of time there, so it wasn't quite the adjustment, but it really was for me. And I really was homesick, bad homesick. So it took us a while to kind of work through a lot of that. But after 6 years, I loved it. Mm-hmm. It was great. All the kind of cultural offerings and obviously career advancements and education advancements with seminary and all that. Great things that added to our experience. But the one thing that it didn't have was our family, our legacy. What would be our kids' grandparents and aunts and uncles and all that. And for us, we realized that was something that was a high value to us when we were ready to start having kids. You know, I wanted my son to go fishing with his granddad. Mm-hmm. You know, I wanted my daughter to, you know, spend time with her grandmother and be spoiled by her grandmother and not try to schedule that in on a trip once a year. And so it really is, you know, when you don't have kids and when you're single, or maybe when you're a young married couple, those things really aren't on your mind a whole lot. You're just out enjoying life and you're gaining the experiences you want to do. But then when you start thinking about starting your family, you think, well, who do I want my kids to be around? Who do I want the stream for them to swim in? Now, not that my family or my wife's family are the, you know, world's greatest people to be around, but they are family. That's who they are. And that's who my kids come from. And I want them to know that. And so that had a lot to do with us moving back.
Okay. So you were probably at some point sitting in your living room in Denver, realizing that you wanted to reconnect, you wanted to return to your roots, you wanted all these experiences for yourself and for your kids. What did you have to sit down and decide at that point? I mean, did it go through your head just to say, okay, I'm going to be lost in the backwoods somewhere, never to escape again from Arkansas? You know, did you sit down and think of what am I going to have to give up versus what am I going to gain? And what did that process look like?
Absolutely.
For you?
Absolutely. I mean, we knew that the main giving up would be kind of all the cultural offerings and experiences that a metropolitan area offered. You know, things like having pro football teams to cheer on operas to go see, and quite honestly, the large and diverse body of Christ to interact with, people from all over the world, you know, how metropolitan areas can be. And that's a very attractive thing if you want to kind of expand your horizons that way. And we knew that going back home, especially if home is smaller, if we're talking about home being a small town, and that's what it was in our case. If home is back to another metro area, then that's not an issue. But for us, we knew that we'd be limited in those areas, and that our kids would be limited in some of those experiences, that we would have to be creative in creating that for them. And we would have to spend time taking them on vacations to those places rather than living in those places. So that was one thing for sure. But the other thing that was really the thing we really had to think through and pray through was the negative stuff of being around family. And there's a lot there. There's baggage there. And everybody has different levels of what that baggage looks like. Some came from really great situations, and there are very healthy relationships with their parents who will become grandparents. And they say, I really want my grandkids to be around this. But there's also some of us who, you know, and on this, there's a continuum, but on the other end is there's a lot of baggage there. And do I want my kids to be around my parents and the way they're going to influence them and that kind of thing? And so we had to think through all of that. And we just decided that the pro outweighed the con there. And the pro is whoever these grandparents are or great-grandparents are, they are your family. And you need to know them. And you need to understand the people that you come from. And let that add to who you are, help you understand who you are. Now, we're all new people in Christ. We all join the family of Christ when we become Christians. But there's also our natural family that we have to acknowledge and be part of. And so, you know, we had to say, okay, now, is this the kind of culture and people that we want our kids to be around? And it was, of course, absolutely yes. There's a lot of drama that's going to go on. We knew that. There's going to be a lot of baggage that was going to be dug up that we were going to have to deal with and address. There were all kinds of boundaries that we were going to have to draw that even a young couple has to draw without kids and say, you know, what do we do Thanksgivings and what do we do Christmases and all these traditions? Both sides of our families are wanting to infuse their thoughts and all of that. And so those were kind of the things we had to say, okay, we need to decide what this is going to look like and be like. We did as much of that as we could before we moved. Then the third thing was, what are we going to do? Mm-hmm. What are we going to do for a living? Mm-hmm. And so we had to find jobs and find a place to live and do all that kind of stuff. And that usually works itself out.
Sure. Okay. So what would you say has been your biggest gain in going back home?
The biggest gain has been for our kids, whom we started to have after we moved. Mm-hmm. And since we've been there, we've had 3 children. And the biggest gain by far has been that they know their flesh and blood relations. They know their cousins. They love their cousins. They play with their cousins. They play with their, you know, their grandparents, and they do things alone with their grandparents, and we are living together. I mean, it's not a commune or anything. We're all in different, we're all kind of in different cities, really. I mean, uh-huh. We're an hour apart from each other, which is a healthy distance. And so the biggest gain has been they know their family, and they are learning about their family. They're learning about their grandparents' life and what life has been like for them and even their great-grandparents as they hear those stories. And it's adding to their experience of the human that they are. Mm-hmm. They're seeing Christ being lived through their family as well, these other extended family members. And that's a different look than what Alfie and I could have brought them alone. Mm-hmm. And for those who have Christian family members, they have some non-Christian family members. And so they're understanding what that is like as well. So there's all of those benefits there. And I would say that's been the biggest pro. Mm-hmm.
So how would you counsel, you know, we'll have a lot of listeners here who are in their 20s and 30s, some, you know, many of them single, many of them newly married. Someone who is trying to weigh, what does it look like to understand the importance of family and the importance of heritage and ties, but maybe is God calling me to stay or is God calling me to go? You know, someone may feel like they're called to the mission field. Is that call greater than the call to stay with family members who may be aging and to not allow their kids to have that experience or something that may involve going to a larger metro city or whatever? What would you, sitting down with some of these folks, say they need to weigh?
Yeah, that is such a great question. And I can give an example in our own family. My wife's sister, she and her husband have been called as missionaries to South Africa. Hmm. And so they are there, and they're not getting to experience a lot of what we are getting.
There are no cousins there, huh?
Yeah, there are no cousins there. I mean, they're doing their thing there mm-hmm. because of the call of God, and we can't ignore that at all. All of this has to be filtered through proximity-wise. Where is God calling you? And if there's some specific place away, then you've got to obey that and go, because whatever satisfaction you have around family isn't going to match the satisfaction and fulfillment of being in the will of God for where He calls you. For us, it was kind of a luxury option that we had. And we even sense that calling back home as well. So I would say, yeah, first and foremost, you've got to hear God on where He's calling you to be. If it's one of those kind of callings that can pretty much manifest anywhere, you know, maybe it's a career field that can kind of go and be anything. Maybe you're called to be a nurse. Well, there's a hospital everywhere. Mm-hmm. But if you're called to a geographical location, that is where it is, and that's what you've got to say yes to. That's the highest priority. In the case that we're talking about here, for us, there was no driving call anywhere else. We felt like our time at Denver was coming to a close. And so we've been able to have the benefit of having those two calls match up. God called us to this place called Little Rock, Arkansas, and it is also where our family is, and that has worked out really well. But the call of God is first and foremost. What I have found, though, Lisa, though, is that a lot of people don't even consider the call of God. They're just looking for how far they can get away, mm-hmm. and where is it going to be fun to be. And I think it was Dennis Prager who said the reason most kids move away from home and go to California is because there's an ocean there and they can't go any further. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. we can travel easily with ease. I mean, we can hop on a plane and go wherever we want to, mm-hmm. all over the country. Just a few generations ago, that wasn't the case. It was a big deal to get on a train and leave your hometown and go far away. But now we travel with such ease. I just think we think because we can, we're going to, without really thinking about it. So what I would urge is at least make this a part of your thought and prayer process in, well, yeah, I do. Kind of the world is my oyster. I can pretty much just go wherever I want to these days. But is it where God wants you to be? And somehow bring your family legacy into that conversation. And as you grow older and you mature a little bit, you're able to understand that a little bit more fully, certainly when you have kids. And lots of prayer is what I would encourage.
Sure. Okay. So as we just wrap up here, one final question. We have a lot of folks who are in the process of entering into marriage now, and you've done a lot of marriage and engagement counseling. So what would you say to a couple who, one example we heard about yesterday was the guy that it looks pretty certain she's going to marry is in a small town in the Midwest. She is now in a big city. They you know, live in different areas. So how, you know, does she need to come to grips with the fact that she may need to move back to this small town? What does it look like for one person to maybe give up some dreams that they thought they had in order to be married? And how do you make both of those dreams work and ultimately settle down into a workable solution?
Yeah, that is such a good question, because that's tough. If you've had a picture in your mind of what it's all going to be like, and then you fall in love with this person and it looks very much like that's not going to be the thing, that can be some difficulty to kind of get your understanding through all of that. But I would say, let's not overcomplicate things too much about where we're going to live and what we're going to do and how many people are, what's the population of that town going to be, and even if it's another country and all that kind of stuff. If this is the person that you connect with, that's going to be the main thing that matters, because it'll be that person and you that gets you through whatever life is going to throw at you down the road. Because you think you're making these big decisions about the small town you're going to live in. You have no idea what God's going to do with you 2 years from now. It could be a metropolitan area. So I would say, be careful not to overanalyze where we're going to be and where we're going to live and all that kind of stuff. Now, it is something to consider, obviously, mm-hmm. because if here's a person who's called to wherever, let's say halfway around the globe, there's going to be some serious sacrifice there for you. You're not going to see your family maybe for a year or two, maybe every 2 years. That's a big deal. But come back to, you know, is this the person that God's calling me to? Do I have a sense of peace when I'm with them? I think that's the overriding thing you have to think about. I wouldn't get too caught up in sizes of towns and all that, because, man, if you're walking with God, every day you wake up to a new adventure. I mean, who knows what it's going to be the next day? God might call you to a huge town. He might call you to Shanghai. Mm-hmm. You know, you just don't know. You just don't know. So I would say, hey, just make sure that this is the person. Now, if you come to say, okay, this is what we're going to do, we're going to go back to this hometown, then I would say, let's be realistic about what our expectations are going to be. Let's make sure we're not going into a mama's boy situation where he's going to run to mama two blocks away every time you guys have a problem. So there are some practical things you have to think through and say, okay, now we need to set some boundaries here. We need to do this and talk about our holidays and talk about all these things. But I tell you, the advantage is going to be when you start having those babies, grandma is going to be ready to watch that baby for you so you can go do a date night or get out of town on the weekend. That's been another big advantage for us being at home is the support culture that we have there when we start having babies is huge.
Mm, that's true, yeah. I was just thinking of that example and just thinking how, well, I guess I would say that if you're like a marketing executive living in New York City and you feel God's calling you to marry a dairy farmer and you're going to be like milking cows, you better have a pretty solid relationship with the Lord and be listening to what he's telling you to do, because is he really calling you to this person? Which he could be, you know, but it's a little bit of a Green Acres situation there.
Yeah, and
so,
God, you know, God will use some of those experiences to, you can go from a metro area to a small area and be expanded very much.
Sure.
I mean, you know, you discover what rural life is like, and that rural life, if we're just talking about small towns, has a huge amount of stuff to offer us. And a lot of times it's hard to find that in metro areas.
It's true. Wow. Well, thanks, John, for weighing in on this. This has been good. And just to hear from your experience, and obviously we hear from you often, but it's good to hear from you in person, from your own experience as far as what you've learned through the process. That's what you've given us in the Hungry Years, too, anecdotal experience and everything from different things you learned as you were moving through those various ages and stages. So great to have you here today.
This has been a pleasure. Great to talk to you face to face.
Opening up today's inbox, I have with me in the studio Steve Waters. Welcome, Steve.
Hey, Lisa.
Looking good.
Welcome
in the tie. I like the orange.
Hey, thanks. You know, orange is the new red.
For 09.
That's what they say.
That's excellent. See, well, that's good to know. Although, really, I think I would say tangerine.
Yeah, I wouldn't, though.
It's more of a, it's, oh, okay.
Yeah, I don't think it's a guy.
That's probably comforting.
You know, in a guy's vocabulary, to say tangerine for a color.
It's a tangerine. Okay.
Nice.
Well, we're going to hear from Richard today for today's question. Richard from Oxford, England.
Look at that.
So I'm sure he's related to C.S. Lewis, so that's good. But here is his question that we are going to address. He says, hi, Boundless. I am a 24-year-old single Christian guy with an interest in a lovely girl of 26. She is a Christian, too. She has just ended, at the start of December, a year-long relationship with another guy. I am not sure how much time to give it until sitting down with her and being honest about my feelings for her. I'm aware she probably needs time to think after coming out of a relationship, and yet another boyfriend is probably the last thing on her mind. Yet I know I have had these feelings for quite a number of months now, but obviously with her previously being in a relationship, I've been unable to air those feelings. I have two other concerns. The first is the age difference. Although her being 18 months older than me is not a big deal, I don't think so anyway. The other concern is that having spent time in Africa in the past, I have a desire to go back there at some point in the future to serve God. I know she has desires to serve overseas, but she's never been to Africa and has never talked about wanting to go there. I hope Boundless can issue some great advice.
You know, Richard, I can relate to what's going through your head. I think about when I was back in college and some people I had interest in and had some of the same questions that you have. But the thing I can really relate with, I mean, I'm just noticing you're from Oxford and thinking about when I visited in that area and just the great scholars and minds that were there, just how easy it is to just live in your head and just dwell and noodle on a relationship and then to think, I've got to get it all on the table. I've just got to get clarity about this relationship. Is it the right time? Is there a problem with the age? Is she okay with Africa? And there's almost this desire to have your first time together as this opportunity to just lay out every detail and walk through it and get some clarity. And I found out the hard way when I would try to have those kind of spill all, put all cards on the table type engagements with people, it never worked. It always blew up. I mean, I remember this one time with this one girl just laying it all on the table like that, and she just had to know that I had feelings for her, and she just had this look on her face like she was constipated. And that, I feel like I probably overcorrected after that and became a lot more vague about relationships, and that's obviously not the answer. There is value in getting some clarity. What I would encourage you to do, though, is think about how to let the relationship unfold naturally, to realize that if you're organic, if you show care and concern for her, those opportunities will come. That if you just knowing that she's coming off this relationship, knowing there's still a lot of questions, the most valuable thing you can initially do is just demonstrate care and concern. And that can win you the opportunity to then ask her out on a date, to start creating some intentionality and some obviousness about what you're interested in. And as that organically unfolds, there will be opportunities to ask questions like, what do you think about Africa? But the key thing is to realize you don't have to lay all your cards on the table the first night, and that there will be those opportunities.
I think too, I think that definitely the first date is not the time to sit down and say, I've been, you know, thinking about you and interested in you this entire time you've been in this previous relationship either. Because that immediately, for a girl, is going to make her think of like some crazy beautiful mind scenario where she would go back to your apartment and find these photos of herself all over the place and you're some scary stalker. So I think just initiating the relationship and having it, like you said, Steve, unfold casually is a good thing. And like what you said about the, you know, don't reveal too much. I have a friend of mine that just last month, a guy who asked me, he was interested in a girl, and he's like, so I don't really know. I feel like I should just sit down with her and be honest about the fact that she's not really my type and I'm not really attracted to her. But I just feel like I should date her. No girl wants to hear that. So let's not get into too much information on that front.
You know, some good writers out of Oxford have reminded other writers that it's better to show and not tell. Mm-hmm. That so often we just want to write. I mean, people who are writers just want to go ahead and just spell it all out. And that it's better to show and demonstrate instead of just tell and articulate everything. And that's often true in relationships, even though there's this the desire to say, I know exactly what's in my heart and what my questions are, and I just want to tell it all and say it all, that it's best to begin to show it. Demonstrate care, demonstrate interest, and that will win you opportunities eventually to back that up with some words and some telling.
Mm-hmm. I think, too, that the fact that you already know that she has a desire to serve overseas is huge. I mean, that's a commonality between you two already. And I wouldn't get too hung up on Africa. I mean, if you're, you know, if your email said, you know, I feel like I'm supposed to go to Chad, or I'm supposed to go, you know, I mean, that wouldn't, it's kind of like, you know, how specific ultimately are you going to get? So I think God leads both people independently, and ultimately, you know, he'll direct you both.
But it doesn't have to be a deal breaker on the front end, that you have to know how she feels about Africa before you can ask her out for coffee.
Exactly.
You know.
Unless it's coffee in Africa. That's a whole different story. So, well, good, Steve. Thanks for weighing in on this one. I think this is helpful. It was kind of a three-parter. Oh, we were going to say, too, just about the age. Not a big deal.
Yeah, not a big deal. I mean, yeah. There's a lot of examples even among some of our best friends, some of our favorite mentors of guys marrying women who were a couple of years older. And obviously it can work well. In fact, some people say that women mature at a different pace from men. And, you know, from couple to couple, that can actually really help to have a little bit of disparity, not to marry at the exact age. But, yeah, not a big deal.
Cool.
All the best, Richard.
All the best. Okay, well, that's it for this week's Inbox. That has been Steve Waters. Thank you, Richard, for your question. And as always, we want to hear from you at editor@boundless.org. Please send your questions in so we can address them here. And Steve and I will have something to talk about other than just our lame personal lives. So until next time, this is your host, Lisa Anderson, and we will see you around.
The Boundless Show is a production of boundless.org. Focus on the family.